And welcome to the Pro Football Weekly Podcast. Thrilled to have you joining us here today. 2 weeks out from the draft, I am Arthur Arkus, your host, here with Nate Atkins, my co-host, bringing you all the latest draft news. And, well, that's pretty much what we're going to focus on today. Like I said, the time is near and big happenings are going on. So we are going to bring in Greg Gabriel, as we do each week, to break down the latest, a huge trade that took place this morning. The Rams making their move for a franchise quarterback, the Titans getting a load of picks in return. We'll get Greg's reaction to that, and then we'll bring in Chris Burke from Sports Illustrated to also break down the trade and go through some of his rankings. Haven't really had anyone different on the show other than Gabriel, just to kind of get a different vantage point in terms of big board. So we'll talk to Chris Burke, looking forward to it. But before we bring in Greg, Nate, how are you doing today?
Doing great, and just really thankful that the Titans and Rams waited it a day to make this happen, so our podcast had a different spin to it. Kind of doing it on the fly, but this is fun, isn't it?
And it's good timing because there's a lot going on, Nate. This morning, a huge, huge deal. The Rams make a move for their franchise quarterback, move up all the way to number one. The Titans get a host of picks in return, and we're excited to break it all down, right?
Absolutely. It's just nice of them to wait till today and give us something to talk about on the podcast and let Mamba have his moment last night, Kobe Bryant going off in his final game, and so kind of excited to break this thing down.
That's right. Mamba goes off last night. The Golden State Warriors, of course, get the 73rd win, and not but 8 hours later, the attention shifts back directly to the NFL. It's pretty amazing stuff. And with that, we're going to bring in Greg Gabriel. Greg, how you doing? Thanks for joining us today.
I'm doing real good. How are you guys doing?
We are outstanding. Just trying to kind of figure out what's going on. Obviously, the NFL world is abuzz right now with the news that the Los Angeles Rams have moved up to the top overall pick. The Titans have received a bunch of compensation in return. I guess just your initial reaction to the move.
I think the only surprising part is that it happened now, but that in saying that, I don't know if the Rams are 100% certain which of the two quarterbacks they're going to take. And I think when they put this deal together with the Titans, they said it has to be done now, so it gives them time to really spend some, say, quality time with both Jared Goff and Carson Wentz. As of today, neither has come in for a private visit. Neither has had a private workout with the Rams. So now over the next week, you're going to probably see that happen, and the Rams will make a decision.
Interesting. I had a note here. I wanted to ask you about the timing of it, which did seem a little weird. It seems like some of these first-round trades typically happen the night of the draft, or at least, I think mostly the night of the draft. So to see it 2 weeks out was a little bit curious, but now this makes a little bit more sense. What do you think, though, about the Rams not having their guy yet? Is that a surprise? Is 2 weeks an eternity in this draft lead-up? Just your thoughts on that.
Well, you can look at it this way. If they had traded up to number two, then they're getting the leftover, so to speak,
right?
The one that didn't go number one. Going up to number one, they got their choice. Now, last night before this deal was made, they're sitting at number 15, and they have no thoughts of drafting either one of those because neither one of those guys is going to last that long into the draft. So now they determine, no, you know what, we have to get one of those two guys. We want to take a closer look at these guys, spend more time with them. We've got 2 weeks to do it. Next Wednesday is the last day that you can bring a player in as far as a visit to your own facility. You can work out, you know, right up until the day before the draft. So they got, in essence, they got a week, 10 days to get a lot of this stuff done. And they really don't have to bring him into the facility. They can go out and spend a day with each player, take them out to dinner, have a workout with them, you know, put them on the board, and then get a comfort level with each one, and then make a determination. This is the guy we want. They have to make the right choice. That's the important thing, or otherwise the trade's going to turn out to be bad for them.
Absolutely, Greg, and it's a lot to talk about the Rams and obviously them gunning for a quarterback, but I'm interested to get your take on the Titans because on one hand they got a lot in return here and they already have a quarterback and it makes a lot of sense from that standpoint, but you know they had an opportunity to take a guy like Laremy Tunsil number one. They moved down to 15 and maybe there's a Jack Coughlin kind of guy there, but how big of a gap do you think there is between the tackles there, if Tennessee wants to go that route between Tunsil and Stanley to Conklin to the other guys there. How much of a drop-off are they getting with this?
Well, I don't think it's a lock that means they're going to take an offensive tackle at the 15th
right.
spot. That, you know, they're going to take what they feel is the best available player. They've got six players now, I think, in the first 76 in the draft. It's going to allow them to get a bunch of quality football players and, you know, rebuild their team, so to speak. And so it's, you know, who's going to go the first 14? When you figure that out, then you're going to say, okay, this is a good player form to take at 15. But I think what John was trying to do was really find the best way he could to replenish the roster. That he looks at the roster, it's not as strong as he'd like it to be, not as strong as he's used to having when he was at New England. He spent a number of years at New England before the last 2 years at Tampa. And I just think that this was a way, having that number one pick and having some teams that wanted their choice of the quarterback, this gave him the opportunity to do it, and then he's going to go with, you know, best available players at each one of those selections. Whether it's a tackle or not, that remains to be seen.
Greg, we are fortunate to have you on the program. Again, this is Greg Gabriel, the author of the Pro Football Weekly Draft Guide, a longtime NFL scout, college scouting director with the Bears for many years. We're thrilled to have him, and one of the many reasons is that you can provide some pretty unique perspective on these types of situations. Can you take us behind the scenes on the conversations that may be going on, at least from your past experience in dealings with these kind of draft-related trades? And I don't know, what's the feeling like in these rooms? How much involvement does the owner have? Because that's one thing that crossed my mind, is Stan Kroenke's involvement in this on the Rams side. Just let the listeners in a little bit, because you do have a pretty unique vantage point.
Well, I think in the case of the Rams, ownership obviously was involved because they're giving up a lot to move to the number one pick. But at the same time, you know, they moved to L.A. from St. Louis, and there hasn't been a franchise in L.A. in years. And the last time the Rams were there, that, you know, it was kind of a they didn't have the greatest backing in the world as far as selling out games, and
right.
It just seems that there's a lot of apathy in the city as far as the NFL is concerned. So now you got to come in and make a splash, and this is their way of doing it. So not only is it a trade to get them a quarterback, which they don't have right now, it also shows a commitment to the city that, you know, we're trying to get the best player. We're going to have an opportunity to draft the best player in this draft or the best quarterback in this draft, and that's going to be the quarterback of the future and hopefully our franchise-type quarterback, and go from there. So I think in that case, ownership did play a role in it. I think what this is going to lead to, and I tweeted this out a little earlier today, it's going to obviously lead to other trades. Now, not necessarily in the next couple of days, but probably in another week or in the last couple of days before the draft, because now people are going to try to jockey for position to get the number two quarterback and some other players. Now, Tunsil was obviously going to be the first pick until this morning when this trade was announced. So now he's out of the picture there. He's probably out of the picture at two, so where does he go? You could have people trying to trade up for that. You know, I think you could end up having, you know, three or four trades in the top 10 now.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. That's going to be the exciting thing to track here in the coming weeks. And I know it's all a guessing game at this point, but Greg, is there a team you think would be a good candidate to maybe make a move up and or a move down in that kind of area after the Rams are at number one?
Well, obviously, you know, the ball is in Cleveland's court right now. What are they going to do at number two? They're going to get the quarterback they're going to have an opportunity to draft the quarterback that the Rams don't select, and then the Cleveland's going to have to say, is this the guy we want? And if that's the case, and then, you know, it may come out a few days before the draft, 3 or 4 days before the draft, that the Rams have decided on, you know, which player they're going to take, whether it's Wentz or Goff, and then Cleveland has to make a decision. Let's say the Rams decide on Wentz, is Goff the guy they want? And if they don't want Goff, then, you know, somebody like Philly or Dallas or San Francisco could try to move into that spot to get that second quarterback. I think it's pretty assured now that the quarterbacks are going to go 1-2, and that's going to really have a big change then on how the whole top 10 comes off the board.
It's great stuff, and it's interesting the way you kind of make it sound, and I totally agree. Perhaps, I don't know, are the Browns winners or losers here? Obviously, they get leapfrogged if they were honed in on one guy, but now it would seem they have a little bit of leverage for some of these other teams you're referring to. But it certainly seems like it's not a foregone conclusion at this point. Now that, the Titans aren't drafting first, they're not going to, pass on one of the quarterbacks. Maybe it's not a certainty that the Browns go in that direction anymore. It sounds like what you're saying.
Well, I mean, everybody thinks they're going to go in that direction because
right.
when you look at their roster, they don't have a quarterback either unless you consider RG3 a quarterback. And to date, he hasn't shown that he can play in the NFL as a bona fide quarterback.
Right.
So, but if the player that the Rams don't take is a guy that the Browns don't want, then, they either take somebody else or they trade out of that spot where they can pick up some more picks, and they could use the picks to somebody who does want the next quarterback. And so that's what's going to be the interesting thing. And I think then you could also have, what happens with Tunzel? Is there going to be somebody who wants to move up now to get Tunzel, who was a day ago going to be the top pick in the draft? So I think, this is going to have a ripple effect. Exactly how it plays out remains to be seen. But I can see a lot of things happening now in the top 10 that we didn't see 24 hours ago.
Spending a few more minutes chatting here with Greg Gabriel. Make sure you're following him on Twitter @GregGabe. Also, make sure you're following his updated draft grades at ProFootballWeekly.com. He's been writing some good columns on the site. I wanted to quickly hit on your most recent column, Greg. You highlighted three players that you believe are being overrated in this year's draft. No, they're not going to fit into the top 10 equation. And I know we could spend hours talking about all the layers of this trade, but let's go in a little bit different direction. The three guys you highlighted, and make sure you're still going to check out the column on the site to get all the details. Greg has Reggie Ragland, Hunter Henry, and Will Fuller all being a little bit overrated in other places he's seeing. The big reasons with Reggie Ragland: lacks instincts, Hunter Henry can't block, Will Fuller inconsistent hands, just one of the big ones. My question to you, Greg, are these things that can be taught at the next level? Can Reggie Ragland become a more instinctive player, and can Will Fuller become a more consistent catcher?
Well, Reggie Ragland is a good player, and I don't want to bang him. I just
right.
don't think he's a first-round talent.
Right.
And you're seeing you look at the mock drafts, and you're seeing him in there. And part of it's not just the instincts; it's the athleticism.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. He didn't test out very good.
Right.
He ran. You're going to take an inside linebacker that runs 4.75, and he had like a 7.57 3 cone. That's an offensive lineman 3 cone time.
Mm-hmm.
So that the superb athleticism that you would want from a first-round pick playing that position is not there with Reggie Ragland. And then when you look at the Alabama team he played on with, everybody in front of him is a future NFL defensive lineman,
right.
That makes his play look that much better. What's he going to do if he was at a lesser school and didn't have that talent in front of him? And as far as Will Fuller, he's a great deep threat, but he's got very small hands. He's a slight frame.
Mm-hmm.
There was a couple games this past year when physical corners basically took him out of the game because he has a tough time getting off press. He doesn't have a large receiving radius, and that's part of that is because of the small hands. Now, he catches the over-the-shoulder deep ball as well as anybody, but when he's got to come across and extend for the ball, that's when he has his drops, and he has over 20 drops in the last two seasons. That's an inordinate amount of drops for a receiver that somebody may take in the first round. Now, could somebody take him because of the home run ability? Absolutely. But there's more to playing receiver than just going to the deep ball, and defenses in the NFL find a way to take that deep ball away. So, and Hunter Henry, again, a move-type tight end, but not very strong, and you have to be able to block in this league, and that's right now is the weak point in his game.
Absolutely, Greg. And just going back to the sort of the trade ramifications here, it's interesting just to look at some of the other teams and their options. I'm just curious your take on it. What are the chances that the number 3 pick with the Chargers is not Laremy Tunsil? Is there any other guy that you think they could go with other than Tunsil?
Well,
there,
I have them taking a defensive player in the mocks that I've done, and in all honesty, since the trade came down this morning, I haven't even looked at their roster to see what their offensive line looks like. And so could they take Tunzel? Absolutely they could take him. But, they've probably been zeroing in on a couple players, and he wasn't in the equation. Now he mm-hmm. comes back into the equation, and you got to look at it. Now, this is a long time ago, but you go back to the Aaron Rodgers trade, or not trade, draft, and, you know, a lot of people thought he was going to go in the top three or the top four, maybe even the first pick in the draft. Day before the draft, the 49ers decide that, you know, they're taking Smith, and Rodgers drops. And the reason he dropped is not because he wasn't talented. Teams weren't prepared for him, and they hadn't done their homework going into the draft, you know, for him to be there, thinking that he was going to, you know, I'm talking teams, say, from beyond five. And they have done all this work on the other players, and they felt more comfortable selecting the players that they had done the work with than a surprise that all of a sudden fell into their laps.
That's an interesting point, Greg. It sounds like perhaps the timing of this deal can benefit a team like the Chargers. If they weren't doing work on Tunsil, now they'll have time to. It seems to open up some more options. I'm on record just watching the offensive line fall apart the past couple years. King Dunlap's a fine player, but you know, I think you can't pass on a guy like Tunsil there. But it'll be interesting to see what happens. Just as we wrap up, and again, we appreciate the time with Greg Gabriel, excuse me, Pro Football Weekly Guide draft guide author. I can talk, I swear. Greg, every year it seems that there's one or two guys who sneak into the first round that we are not prepared for. I think last year, Laken Tomlinson, maybe a little bit of a reach. Actually, a few offensive linemen. You go back a couple years, Travis Frederick, Juwan James. I think these caught some people off guard a little bit, sneaking into round one. A name or two maybe that you could see perhaps surprising some folks and slotting into that Thursday night 2 weeks from now?
A name that I keep hearing that could go at the tail end of the first round, and it wouldn't shock me at all because he's clearly the best player at that position. It's another offensive lineman, Brian Kelly from Alabama.
Okay.
And you know, if he, you know, when you get to around that number 25 slot, you know, between 25 and 35, 25 and 40, when you're looking at your value board, a lot of these players are pretty even.
Right.
So now it's need, and which one do you like a little bit better than the other? And so, you know, you could throw in for those last, you know, few slots of the first round, you could throw in eight or nine names, and all of them make sense. And he's a name that, you know, I've heard quite a bit of recently, is a guy who could slip into the bottom part of the round.
Real good. And then just on the way out, Greg, last one I have for you. We know you've been grinding on these guys and have seen a ton of tape and been evaluating well over 200 players. Is there one guy that has been the most fun to evaluate, and then maybe one guy that has been the trickiest for you to assess over this process?
Well, I there's a guy who's not going to go in the first round.
He might not even go in the second round.
But, I mean, a player that I really liked watching was Kentrell Brothers, the linebacker, inside linebacker from Missouri. Just an all-out performer, great instincts. He might have the best instincts of the inside linebackers in this draft. Makes a lot of plays. Physically, he's not the biggest guy. He's 6'1⁄2", 245, and he only runs 4'8". But on the field, he plays like he's a 4'6", 5' guy, and makes plays all over the field, and like I said, highly instinctive. And for linebackers, that's one of the most important traits you can have.
No doubt about it. And full disclosure, Greg is talking to a few Mizzou guys here, but I don't think he knew that, so he's not just throwing us a bone. Kentrell Brothers, a really good player.
In all honesty, I didn't know you guys were Mizzou guys.
All three of us here.
And highly, highly productive in the SEC, so that's good to hear. Greg, we, as always, truly appreciate your time. We'll let you get back to work, and we can't wait to have you back on next week with just 1 week to go before the draft. Thanks again for joining us.
Okay, talk to you next week, guys. Thanks.
All right.
Thanks, Greg.
That's Greg Gabriel. He had all kinds of good nuggets there. I love what he led with, too, about the timing of this deal. It was one of the first things that jumped out at me was it doesn't normally happen 2 weeks in advance, but to hear him say that that's an opportunity for the Rams to continue vetting these guys, and also to hear, I'm sure it's not the Rams' intention, but that it could create opportunities for other guys, other teams, excuse me, a little bit down the draft board, is definitely interesting stuff. So that was Greg Gabriel. We will have him back next week as we close in on the draft. We are going to take a quick break, but coming up on the Pro Football Weekly podcast, as promised, another great draft expert is joining us. Sports Illustrated's Chris Burke. We will continue talking about the trade. I'm sure he's got some other things on his mind as well. So that and more when we return. Welcome back to the Pro Football Weekly podcast. I'm your host, Arthur Arkus, joined in studio by co-host Nate Atkins. That was Umphrey's McGee, the song Out of Order, bringing us out of the break, and kind of fitting because the draft order has gotten thrown a little bit out of whack here this morning on Thursday with the blockbuster deal, obviously the Rams moving up to the first pick overall. And as I mentioned, we are fortunate enough to be bringing you Chris Burke from Sports Illustrated. Nice enough to join us. Chris, how are you doing?
Doing very well. How's it going, guys?
We are doing well, thank you. And obviously a thing or two to talk about, so I'm just going to go ahead and jump right in. Just your initial reaction, I saw you had a post yesterday with a bunch of mock trade possibilities. Didn't necessarily see the Rams moving up quite this far. I don't think you were alone, huh?
Yeah, I mean, I pitched some potential trades there, and I did include the Rams. I mentioned I thought it would probably take a first, both their seconds this year and their first and third next year, which came pretty close. I didn't really think that was actually going to be in the realm of accuracy, though.
Go to Vegas,
maybe
Chris.
Move up to 7-8 if someone was there. But, I mean, it's obviously a huge gamble for them. You can see to some extent why they want to do it, because it's been several years now trying to find a quarterback, and there's only so many options you can chase down at that position. If you see the opportunity to get a guy you like, you got to go after him. But I definitely like it from the Titans' perspective. I mean, Laremy Tunsil at one, Jalen Ramsey would have been nice, but to get the volume of picks they now have over the next 2 years, that's really what you need if you want to turn a team around in relatively short order.
Yeah, no doubt, and it's nice to already have that quarterback in place, obviously. I think some would argue that was the difference with the move the Rams made when they packaged RG3 a few years ago. So John Robinson seems to be in pretty darn good shape in his first offseason as a rookie GM. But, Chris, I think we are comfortable at this point saying the Rams are going to draft a quarterback, and scanning your big board, I noticed quite the disparity between the two guys, Jared Goff and Carson Wentz. I'm just curious to get your take on the two, how you view them, and then maybe how you view them potentially fitting the Rams, and maybe which guy they're focusing on.
Yeah, I have Goff at 14 and Wentz kind of late round one, early round two grade. I have been in mock drafts. We've had him in the top 10. So right. I think that sort of speaks to, the quarterback situation, how desperate teams are to get that position. And, you know, the main reason I have Wentz lower, I think, is that I trust to some extent Goff to be able to step in and play fairly early and be decent, and I'm not quite as sure about Wentz. You know, I think that the competition argument can get a little overblown, mm-hmm. because FCS, there are some obviously some really good teams, and I think you're still looking at traits, but I do worry a little that at how much he's played or how little he's played. He only threw 600 career passes in college. I think there certainly is a pretty steep learning curve. And I like Goff's, he's so quick with his feet and so quick with his release. I mean, the type of stuff that if you want to put him in kind of a West Coast system, I think he could be really good. In terms of fit, that's where it gets interesting, because like I said, if you want a starter for this year, if you want to send Case Keenum to the bench, mm-hmm. I assume that's what they would like to do at some point.
Yeah.
I would say Goff, in terms of what their offense has been and what it you think it would be with Todd Gurley and with the type of offensive lineman they have, Wentz maybe fits better because he has experience in more of a pro-style system under center, you know, downhill running, at least as part of that North Dakota State attack. So that's where it kind of gets intriguing, I think, and why we're hearing that it still could be either guy at this point.
Yeah, absolutely, Chris, and you brought up a great point about the NFL readiness of those guys, and it's obviously a big point of discussion right now, but I'm curious your thoughts on just how much are the Rams going to weigh that, because like you said, they have a situation where they'd love a guy to come in day one, especially with the sort of flash appeal that'll provide to with the move to L.A., but I mean, how much can they weigh that against who they think is ultimately the better quarterback long term? How much value would you give that?
Yeah, the Rams are tricky because you keep thinking Jeff Fisher is going to be on the hot seat, and he keeps not getting fired. So, you in that regard, and with the move, they obviously trust him, that franchise. In terms of, you know, feeling pressure to start the rookie or anything, I think he's probably down towards the bottom of quarterbacks who, or of coaches who would sort of be pressured by the fans or even by the front office. I think he'll stick to what he wants to do. And if they take Wentz and say, well, we're going to maybe similar to what Jacksonville tried to do with Chad Henne and Blake Bortles, you know, wait and see if you can ease him into the lineup. That got thrown off because of an injury. But I wouldn't be shocked if Case Keenum, as they keep promising, does end up the week one quarterback and they take their time with this, because I think this does buy them some more time. You know, I don't know that this puts them over the top as a Super Bowl contender this season, but I think if you're looking at this long term, you got to do what's best for the quarterback and what's best for the franchise. So I don't think they have to rush him in because he's the number one pick, whomever it winds up being.
Interesting points for sure, and obviously having Todd Gurley there, having a lot invested in the offensive line, although I know it has not yet performed as they envision, is going to help whomever they do end up selecting. Kind of switching directions just a little bit, certainly still related to this huge news. What do you think of Paxton Lynch? What do you think this news today means for Paxton Lynch and perhaps the other QB-hungry teams that we know about, particularly the few in the top 10? How does this sort of recalibrate maybe the thinking there?
I think it's great news for him as a prospect, because if you're thinking quarterback at one, very good chance of quarterback at two. I don't think anyone's 100% that happens yet, but very good chance of quarterback at two. Then Lynch certainly has to be in play as that third guy. And so if quarterbacks go 1-2, I think as early as Dallas at four, you're looking quarterback again, San Francisco, and then there are several teams further down the list. So you would assume that someone, or maybe another move to get him. I think it's hard now to see him really dropping beyond maybe the Jets at 20. I mean, I think there's going to be some team that gets anxious and wants to go up after him. So great news for him. I mean, as a prospect, it's sort of a little bit from Goff and a little bit from Wentz in terms of the concerns. You know, the competition level thing, I think if you want to throw out there again, some of the accuracy, the issues that maybe Wentz you might have to worry about in the pocket. But also coming out of a system that's more like what Goff is coming out of. So I think there's going to be some transition for him to, if you want to put him in a pro-style system or even something that's a little more rigorous, a little deeper than what he ran in college. And again, you're talking about, I think, probably more of a 2-3 year project than someone who starts week one, which in terms of where he lands, you know, if he were to go somewhere like Arizona, I think, is a good fit for him, or even a Chicago. I mean, somewhere where there's a quarterback there and you don't need him right away.
Absolutely. And you mentioned the Browns at number two, and they're, you know, now going to be a big talking point about, will they take a quarterback or what will they do? Will they trade down? What do you think is the best option for them? Do they just sit back and say, if it's Wentz or Goff, whoever the Rams don't take, we'll go with that guy and have him compete with RG3? Or do you think there's another sort of game-changing player that they'd be better off with? Or is a trade down really in their best interest right now?
I mean, if they get anything in the ballpark of what Tennessee got, I think you have to take that into heavy consideration and think about trading down. And I doubt that they would be able to kind of break the bank like that. But even if they were to get, you know, you get an extra second and maybe you get an extra first next year, an extra second or third somewhere along the line, I think you've got to consider that, because, again, it's a team that's not 1-2 players away. This is it's already been several years rebuilding for them, but several more probably to come. So you get kind of in that position where, do you want to throw a quarterback in there behind an offensive line you're rebuilding and a wide receiver core that's not very good. And so that's a tough spot. I mean, I think if they like one of those two guys, if they like Wentz or Goff, whomever's there, I think you've got to pull the trigger, because you have to have a quarterback in this league. But if they're on the fence at all, you know, either a trade down or Tunsil Ramsey, there's a reason we've been talking about them as the potential number one, number two guys for so long. It's because they're that good, especially in this class. So I would have no problem with them taking really either of them, but I think especially Ramsey, given how bad they've been on defense, and then trying to make a quarterback move in round two or round three.
Visiting with Chris Burke from Sports Illustrated, the excellent NFL and draft expert at SI, and you should be following him on Twitter if you're not already, at @ChrisBurke_SI. Chris, I want to kind of change direction a little bit. I know we could talk about the quarterbacks and this huge deal for hours and hours, but let's change a little bit. Everyone's talking about the DTs in this draft, one of the deepest spots. I'm looking at your big board again, and Vernon Butler, at least at the – I don't know if it's the most updated one. I think you had him somewhere in the vicinity of 10 or 11. We didn't have him quite as high, but I see he is in a lot of other places. Our draft writer, Greg Gabriel, has a third or fourth round grade on him. Can you just tell us a little bit about Vernon Butler and maybe speak to the depth of this defensive tackle draft and why he's so close to the top of it on your rankings?
Yeah, it definitely is a deep class. I think that there probably will be quite a bit of fluctuation at that spot across when we talk about draft boards and mock drafts and stuff, because I think it's, you know, you go really from the top to into that third, fourth round, and I don't know that there's a huge gap across a lot of these guys that, you know, you'll be talking about in that range. So, I mean, I think our latest mock draft, I had him at 31 to Denver. I mean, I think that's probably more in the range where he winds up, somewhere in late round one, early round two. But I like him because of, first of all, he's a big guy, 6'3", 320, whatever it is exactly. But not necessarily pigeonholed into the spots you would think of a 320 guy. He played all over up front for Louisiana Tech, and I think he can do that at the next level, too. So whether you want him inside or you want him to help out a little further away from the ball, I think he can do that. He's got some strength to move guys. And really, he moves really, really well for a 320-pounder. And I think that's something we see, you know, Andrew Billings and guys like that. It's a really athletic defensive tackle class, which I think is what jumps out as much as anything else. And to me, Butler's right in there as a guy that I bump him up, especially because I think you can fit him in any scheme, and I don't know that you can say that necessarily about every prospect.
Yeah, along the lines of that deep defensive line class a lot of people talked about, it's going to cause guys with first-round type grades to drop into the second round and whatnot. Is there a guy you're looking at that you think is maybe a potential steal? I don't know if it's second round or later than that you think should go higher, but because of the depth of this class, he's just going to fall a little bit?
I'm interested to see where Chris Jones winds up. I mean, I think he fits that bill, and he's a guy with first-round potential who didn't really produce the way you would expect. He wasn't even starting through his whole junior year at Mississippi State, so you wonder if teams will knock him a little bit for that. But he, again, a guy who can be in multiple fronts and very athletic, so I think if he falls into round two, he's one to remember. Javon Hargrave from South Carolina State, a small school guy. So we talk about the competition level with quarterbacks. I think it's there for him. I think the endurance level for him is going to be a challenge going up. But great at the Shrine Game, Senior Bowl. I mean, he's another potential steal down there too that I think can be an interesting player. But again, you know, you go into the mid to later rounds, and there's just, I mean, I think Malik Collins from Nebraska is a kind of a nose tackle type that's a potential steal. Matt Ioannidis from Temple. I mean, there's a lot of guys that are good in this class.
Yeah, it's going to be a good year to find those trench guys on defense for sure. And actually, I think on offense, on the edges, the offensive tackle class is considered to be pretty good as well, maybe not as good on the interior. Just a few more minutes here with Chris Burke. We do greatly appreciate the time. And I'm not going to lie, I'm being kind of selfish here. I'm asking about a couple of my favorite players, and I'm going to continue doing so. I notice you have Duke's Jeremy Cash, relatively high, top 40 guy, and then Sua Cravens just a few slots below. These are, I think, sort of similar players, kind of this next in the wave of hybrid safety, hitting linebackers. Can you just talk a little bit about Cash? He was just kind of looked so athletic and explosive during Senior Bowl practices. I know you were down there as well. But just talk about a little those two guys and maybe the way the NFL is trending at that position.
Yeah, I mean, I love Cash. And
don't we all?
I mean, I think that he's someone that he's a player that there are another guy that's sort of differing opinions on from time to time. And I think the big question on him is, is the coverage. And we think about him, I mean, he's a safety, was a safety, and, you know, listed as a safety. So you think, well, can he cover? And like you said, I think the key for him is we have to think of both him and Sua Cravens more as at least hybrid linebacker safeties, and almost to the point where they're just linebackers who can cover some. And I think that's Cash is definitely can play in the box, can be an aggressive player against the run. I think he's better in coverage than maybe people give him credit for. I don't know that he'll play necessarily great man-to-man coverage, but he's quick. He just ran a 4.6, put up some good shuttle times at his pro day. I mean, I think he has the speed to be effective at least, you know, in zone coverage, or if you want to play him as a safety in cover two, someone where he's not necessarily responsible for the entire width of the field up top, but can cover some ground. But really, again, you want him as close to the ball as possible and as active near the line of scrimmage as possible. And I think that's the same thing with Cravens. You know, the size on Cravens is, I guess, the question. It's 6 foot, and he didn't have great test time. So the quickness, I guess, is something else you maybe worry about a little bit. But another player that, you know, you can kind of play at the second or third level and just sort of turn him loose and let him go after the football. I think that's hearing about him as a potential, you know, even a 4-3 weak side guy. I think that's why, because you don't necessarily want to match him up physically against tight ends or anything like that. But if you can just get him in space, he can be super effective for you.
Yeah, and we'd be mistaken if we didn't ask you about one of the more polarizing prospects. Everyone's got a different opinion on him, but Laquon Treadwell, the receiver from Ole Miss, I know in the big board I'm seeing you have him at number 6, and of course everyone's wondering about his speed and is he fast enough to be the top receiver in the class or one of those top 15 type picks. Where do you think he's actually going to kind of slide into in this draft, where you see teams already reaching and racing for quarterbacks in this passing league? Are teams going to be tempted to do that a little bit with receiver, or where do you think he's going to kind of settle in?
Yeah, I mean, I think I could see teams waiting on receiver this year, because it's similar to defensive tackle. It's not necessarily where there are a bunch of top 10 talents, but there's a huge amount of players available in the you know, 25 to 100 range that can be impactful guys. To me, I think I sort of set realistically. I think he deserves to be in top 10 consideration. I think realistically, you kind of start at maybe Chicago at 11, definitely the Saints at 12, just because of what they do offensively, and then just kind of work your way down to any team that could use an impact wide receiver. So I think he winds up somewhere in the middle of round one, despite all the worries of late about his speed. And, you know, I don't think he's someone that needs that speed necessarily. He doesn't really play a speed game. He's just so big and so physical that even if, you know, you're not turning him loose, he's not getting open deep downfield, he's just such a tough guy to cover. You know, we think of slot receivers really when we talk about possession receivers, but that's to some extent that's what he is. He's a guy that you just want to get him he'll get open underneath, he'll get open in those short spaces and get you yardage. And he's, you know, so maybe that doesn't fit the bill of a top 10 guy, but I think between that and what he can do in the red zone, to me I have him at 6, and I think that's I've liked him all along, and I think he can just do so much for an offense that he deserves to be in the top half of round one for sure.
Great stuff from Chris Burke at Sports Illustrated. On the way out, for real here, I asked Greg Gabriel right before you came on, so I have to do the same to you, because I'm curious. Who is the trickiest evaluation for you in this draft, A? And then, B, is there a guy whose name maybe we're sleeping on who you could see sneaking into the first round 2 weeks from tonight?
Ooh, trickiest evaluation. It's probably one of the quarterbacks. I mean, Paxton Lynch to me was a tough one, honestly, because – you know, he just has so much there that you could see an NFL team really liking in terms of the size and the way he can move and all those things. But it's just so inconsistent in how he plays that it's not always there when you watch him. So you wonder, like I said, I think he's a project guy, but you wonder how big of a project he's going to be. And so that's been a tough one, I think, for me to kind of really hammer down. And Corey Coleman, too, because I think some of that is just you hear everyone talk up a player and you think, oh, I should love this guy. And I like Corey Coleman, but to me he's more of a round two player than a round one guy because of where his limitations are. So that was a trickier one. In terms of guys we're sleeping on, I mean, could get into round one. I think Ryan Kelly, I mean, I think because that's – I don't know if that's a surprise at this point, the center from Alabama.
Was Gabriel's guy as well.
Oh, really?
Good. Yeah. But there's a reason for that, obviously.
I'll give you one more then. now I got to
– That's okay.
I think I'll throw out a deep sleeper because I think of the we talk about the versatility and guys who can play multiple positions. We saw Byron Jones shoot up the draft board.
Yeah.
Last year, I think Jalen Mills is someone who's going to go a lot higher than people think because of his ability to play corner, play safety, great feet, good quickness, good size. I don't know that he gets into round one, but I wouldn't be shocked if it happened.
Interesting. Good stuff. Jalen Mills, the DB from LSU, of course, for our listeners who don't know. We've taken too much of Chris Burke's time, but we have greatly appreciated it. That was awesome stuff, Chris. A lot of fun, and we hope you'll come back on again and join us soon.
Yeah, sure thing, guys. Thanks for having me.
Thank you.
Thanks.
Good stuff, right? We had a couple guys making us sound a lot better than we are because these are as plugged in as anyone in the DraftKnick community. So we hope you've enjoyed it. We are out of time for today, but we still got a week left. We're going to go back hot and heavy with Greg Gabriel next week. We'll see if we might be able to bring in someone else to talk draft too. But enjoy it. It is fastly approaching. Nate, it's been a lot of fun, right?
Absolutely. It's been great.
We appreciate you guys joining us. We hope you'll do it again next week. For Nate, I'm Arthur. And for John Solly, who's been spinning the dials on his own, making us sound, again, better than we are. Thanks again for coming, and we'll look forward to talking with you next week.